Every year, a lot of animals lose their life due to various kinds of accidents, but some of them are lucky enough to get a second chance. Perseus, the Greek cat, is one of them. The stray feline was taken to a vet in the city of Larissa last year after a terrible accident. The vets had to perform 3 surgeries, but Perseus lost the same number of limbs. However, he managed to stay alive and was given prosthetic legs. Perseus has adapted perfectly to his new limbs and now uses them to get around. He has also managed to snatch the heart of his saviors as visitors at the clinic where he cured have grown. The Japanese art collective has created a mesmerizing environment in a forest where nature and technology come together. In the mountains of Kyushu in southern Japan, the nature comes to life after the dark. Flowers and trees are illuminated in a glowing ripple shine, while rocks turn colorful with light installations. A waterfall made of light pours gently on a bright rock. Some rocks have calligraphy, and artificial pond projects colorful fish too. The artists behind the work say their aim is to unite technology and nature.
The thing is, sometimes people think it's a digital and nature is completely against each other. But in the same time, we think it's in a digital and the nature is quite easy to be merged.
The Japanese team also wants to raise awareness about the original beauty of the nature, which they say is often ignored. To remind people of that, they hold exhibitions combining projections, sound and carefully designed spaces. So far, the group has organized several art shows of this kind. Animals have been providing protection and service to people since time immemorial. They have not only been the source of food like meat, butter and milk, but also served humans by eating plants toxic to them. Authorities in New York City have taken 2 dozen goats from a nearby farm to the Riverside Park in Manhattan to munch on invasive weeds. They say it's an environmentally friendly win-win for the species removal at the park. The goats get to feast on overgrown bush, and Riverside Park Conservancy doesn't have to dump harsh chemicals on weeds. Park officials say it's both healthy for the goats and good for the environment.
As part of our woodland restoration initiative, 2 years ago, we unleashed a very hungry group of goats into a stretch of the park that had been overrun with invasive plants. And wow, did they exceed expectations. We called it Gotham because we put the goat in Gotham. They chowed down on Japanese knotweed. They noshed on porcelain berry. They snacked on multiflora rose. They easily traversed the hard-to-reach terrain behind me and gulped down poison ivy without even giving it a second thought. Since goats are naturally effective weed whackers, putting them to work in Gotham is like treating them to an all-you-can-eat buffet. It's healthy for the goats, and it's good for the environment. That's farm to table.
People visiting the goats at the zoo say these animals are emotionally intelligent and connect with people. Goats are an ingenious approach to weed removal, eating species dangerous to humans like poison ivy. Of the 24 goats, 5 will call Riverside Park its home through the end of August. For some others, the public can vote to determine which goat will be crowned the greatest of all time. The winner will be announced by the end of the summer.
Singapore unveils one of the world's biggest floating solar panel farms in a bid for quadrupling its solar energy production by 2025. The farm is as big as 45 football fields. It includes 122,000 solar panels. The panels are designed to last for 25 years, and drones will be used to assist with maintenance. The farm is located on a reservoir in western Singapore and will generate enough electricity to power its 5 wet air treatment plants. It puts Singapore among the few countries in the world with a wet air treatment system fully powered by green energy. The farm can reduce Singapore's carbon emissions by 32,000 tons annually. Floating solar panels perform up to 15% better than conventional rooftop panels. That's because of the cooling effect of water and that shading from other buildings does not affect them. Singapore is currently developing 4 other floating solar panel projects. Maybe kittens are considered the cutest baby animals by many of us, but just wait to see this baby hippo, which was born during a full moon. The male calf was born in a Mexican zoo last month. He weighs 30 kilos upon birth. Since then, he has spent most of his time bonding with his mother. The vets in the zoo say he is healthy, playful, strong, and a bit hyperactive. They say some of his habits are surprisingly similar to that of a horse or a dolphin. Generally, reproduction among zoo hippos is not a common practice. Therefore, newborn calves are signs of high quality of the lives and habitats of their parents. A zoo in central France is welcoming the birth of a male giraffe after 15 months of waiting. The calf is named after Melman, the giraffe character in the Madagascar movie franchise. He was born on Sunday in a Beauval Zoo park. He is 170 centimeters tall and weighs 55 kilograms. Zookeepers say Melman is a special baby.
A giraffe birth here. It's our second birth since we've had the group of females established for a few years. So for us, it's still quite an important and exceptional event because it's not every day that we have a giraffe birth.
The giraffe keepers say Melman stood on his feet for the first time 45 minutes after being born. Since zoos have opened in France, visitors can enjoy seeing little Melman playing around with his mother. The birth of the baby giraffe is good news for wildlife preservation, as according to estimates, the number of the animal in the wild has dropped by about 30% since the 1980s.
The Light is a short bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields, like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
The issue of marine trash has long worried scientists and environmentalists. Now a French engineer has invented a robot to help clean ocean waste. The Jellyfish Bot is a remote-controlled electric-powered boat that helps clean rubbish from the surface of the water. It's 70 centimeters long and 70 wide, almost the size of a suitcase. The robot can collect everything from plastic bottles to masks and even oil and petrol. Despite its wide-ranging utility, Jellyfish Bot has a rather simple mechanism.
To collect trash, you have to do something as simple as possible, because otherwise, if we put too complicated mechanisms, it can get blocked and things can get stuck in the system. We designed the robot with a slide mechanism that goes towards a net, so we fill up the net, we take back the net, and that's the end of it.
The trash-collecting robot is being used at around 15 ports in France, lightening the workload of local cleaners. It has also been exported to countries including Japan, Norway, and Singapore. The makers have also developed an autonomous version of the boat.
Malaysians at a vaccination center in the city of Kuching have witnessed a surprising scene. A T-Rex turned up to get his COVID-19 jab. Fitness instructor Kenny Sear dressed up in a dinosaur costume to amuse people, doesn't he look fabulous, and protect himself. Sear said he made the decision to lift up the spirits of frontline health workers, is exhausted by vaccinating over 5,000 people a day. People rush to take pictures with him, hailing his appearance as historic and funny. A giant 3D cat has risen to fame in the Japanese capital, Tokyo, bringing joy to citizens amid the COVID-19 pandemic. A massive billboard featuring the cat has been installed in one of Tokyo's busiest districts. The realistic-looking cat on a 4K resolution screen appears every few minutes between advertisements. Depending on the time of day, the cat appears differently and sometimes meowing at people walking by. The companies that set up the billboard hope that they can cheer people up during the dark era of the coronavirus pandemic. The display has already caused a frenzy in the city and among the social platforms, with many expressing joy and amazement at the technology.
Peru is full of natural wonders worthy of appreciation in each of its regions. A zoo in the capital Lima has now unveiled an incredibly cute and adorable Andean alpaca calf to attract visitors amid dwindling zoo-goers due to the coronavirus pandemic. This furry baby alpaca named Paquita is just 1 month old and was introduced to the public on the eve of the 200th anniversary of Peru's independence from Spain. The zoo has also displayed its families of llamas, alpaca, and vicuña. The three are members of South American camelids' biological family and are traditionally valued for their soft and warm wool. They live in the Andes Mountains, which lay thousands of meters above sea level. Peruvians are proud of the history of wools associated with these species, which have common ancestors with camels.
Four German tightrope walkers have set a new world highlining distance record by crossing an Arctic valley in Sweden. The group tiptoed a distance of more than 2 kilometers between two mountain peaks in Lapland barefoot. The line they walked on was set at a height of 600 meters. The four members of the team walked the line one after another successfully, despite challenges including the wind and long distance. It took 2 days for the team to rig the line between the two peaks.
A herd of elephants migrating in China have been making headlines for months. Now they have once again attracted attention. Experts monitoring the animals this week noticed two females engaged in a dramatic fight over the herd's leadership, where they kicked and bit each other. The tussle soon ended after a male elephant succeeded in calming the belligerent giants. The fight happened in China's southwestern province of Yunnan. The herd embarked on a lengthy journey last year after escaping a nature reserve and has since trekked hundreds of miles. The elephant's migration is the longest one in China's history.
A distinctive feature, no matter of humans or animals, often catches our attention. You might have heard stories about the big fat cow or other animals you love the most. Here we bring you a story about a cow for her not being big, but for being the smallest. Rani, a 23-month-old cow, is being reared on a farm near the Bangladeshi capital, Dhaka. She is only 20 inches tall and weighs 26 kilograms. Local vets say the little Rani has no physical problems but will no longer gain any weight or height. The owner believes Rani is shorter than the smallest cow in Guinness World Record. The record for the smallest cow so far held by a four-year-old red cow named Manikyam from the Indian state of Kerala.
We found on the internet that the smallest known cow is living in India's Kerala, which weighs 40 kilograms, but ours weighs only 26, so we believe ours is the world's smallest. That's why we applied to the Guinness World Records. They replied to us saying they will investigate within 90 days.
The tiny cow has also caused tourist frenzy in the South Asian country as thousands are flocking to Dhaka to take a glance despite coronavirus restrictions. The owner says only over 15,000 people come to visit her in just 3 days. The dwarf cow has also gone viral on social media. A nearly 22-meter-high sand sculpture in Denmark has set a new Guinness record as the world's tallest sand castle. The sculpture has been constructed with nearly 5 tons of sand. It's made in the shape of a triangle, and a wood structure stabilizes it. More than 30 artists from different countries have worked on the project, carving intricate details on the castle's wall. Its makers say a nod to the coronavirus pandemic was also made at the top of that construction. They say that's because the virus has controlled the lives of people over the past months. The sand piece broke the previous Guinness record that belonged to an 18-meter-high sand castle in Germany. An adorable baby elephant has become a web celebrity after she was caught on camera using a muddy hill as playground slide. Footage shows the little elephant excitedly approaching a hill with a smooth path leading downward. The baby then goes on all fours to have the time of her life sliding on her belly down the hill, taking full advantage of rain. The toddler, named Yishong, is only 3 years old. She lives at a rescue center in China, one of the major habitats for wild Asian elephants in the country.
This man changed the world.
Allahu Akbar, Khomeini Rahbar. Allahu Akbar, Khomeini Rahbar.
Our bosses couldn't cope with the idea of an 80-year-old Ayatollah, which they didn't even know what an Ayatollah was, who lived on garlic and onions and yogurt, directing a revolution that was about to topple America's most important ally.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. In name of Allah, the Exalted, the Most Compassionate, the Most Merciful. Salam, hello and welcome to our audience, and particularly a warm welcome to our regular listeners of our program, The Man Who Changed the World. This is a program dedicated to Imam Khomeini. May God bless his great soul. And I'd like to welcome my expert and guest, an academic, an Islamic scholar, Dr. Mahdi Tarabi, and a good friend as well, who will give us insight on the subject of enemies. Enemies, who were the enemies of Imam Khomeini? May God bless his soul. And who were his friends? Because that's not something we've looked into while we've been doing this particular series of programs. And we're talking about the polarization of his character. What did he bring out in other people in terms of this relationship? That, you know, in terms of who were the people who were becoming his enemies and who were the people that were his friends? So, Dr. Mahdi Tarabi, I leave that entirely to you, because, we're coming on the back of the fact that we were discussing about Imam Ali alayhi salam, and, you know, Imam Ali is normally judged by his enemies, because that's what we get from history. So fire away, sir. Tell me what you think.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. I think it's clear for anyone who witnessed these things.
Yeah.
that exactly like Imam Ali alayhi salam, who was polarizing.
He was a polarizing character. Because we're talking about somebody who stands for principle.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. That just like his mullah, Ali, Imam Khomeini was a polarizing person.
He was.
And the point is that this is a good thing. This is the point.
Yes, yes.
When we say polarizing, immediately we have this negative
connotation.
Right. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, you're not supposed to be polarizing.
Ah.
Right? You're supposed to get along. We're supposed to get along with everyone all the time.
Yes, yes.
Everything to everyone.
Mm. Right? And everything to no one.
Exactly. So, I would argue that polarizing is a positive trait.
I think so.
That we see in its greatest manifestation.
I think this is a fundamental characteristic of a mu'min, of a believer.
Of anybody who stands up for haq, for truth.
Truth.
Who stands up for justice.
Yes.
I'm talking about not, you know, occasionally or when it serves him.
Right.
But as a matter of principle and as a matter of life, his own life.
Sure.
In the things that he does on a daily basis, in every situation, it will end up, you know, upsetting some people.
It will.
Especially people around him.
Exactly.
Who might be close to him.
Sure. I just wanted to raise a point that, you know, Imam Khomeini, may God bless his great soul, Ruh Allah, spirit of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. There is another spirit of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. We call him Jesus, son of Mary.
Exactly.
And if I remember my Bible correctly, he had a lot of enemies.
Exactly.
He went to the temple in Jerusalem, and he hated the tax man. So do I. But at the end of the day, he had the priesthood, the rabbis, the scholars of his time, the doctors, they were called, the Pharisees. They opposed Jesus. They didn't like his message. They didn't like what he was doing. He didn't like the fact that he was performing miracles. But we're not talking about things on that level. But what we are saying is that that seems to be part of the ethical makeup of what we're discussing here. That this is what happens when you have somebody who, as you quite rightly point out, sir, standing for truth, standing for what is right, standing for God, for principle. Well, something's bound to
precisely
and react to that.
Precisely. So we see that historically.
Yeah.
The prophets, the imams, those who are our guides, have been polarizing people.
People, yes.
And
for all sorts of reasons.
Right. Well, the main reason being is that they will not give in to battle. They will not give in to injustice. They will not give in to those who might have power or who might
influence
who might be considered the elites, who might be considered those who are privileged.
Privileged, yes.
They will not give in to them
no.
if it's a matter of truth and principle.
And justice.
And justice. And this creates enemies for them.
Yes.
Okay? Ibrahim, Musa.
Yes.
You know, all of them.
A whole long...
All of them.
All of them, yes.
And I would argue that maybe the greatest example of that is Imam Ali alayhi salam.
Of course. Without a doubt.
We even have this wonderful, small, short book written by Shahid Mutahhari.
That's right, yes.
The
polarization of Imam Ali alayhi salam. Exactly. Yes. Great book.
Where very briefly he discusses this fact that it's not about, you know, being the most popular person all the time with everyone.
No, you're not. You can't be.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. And so my point of bringing this up, as you said, Eid al-Qadir.
Yes.
Which is the Eid in which at the pond of Qadir, the Prophet, peace be upon him, in his final Hajj, declared that Ali is his successor.
Successor, yes.
And the Wali.
And the Wali. The master.
Right. And everybody.
Everybody.
Everybody swore allegiance.
Who had allegiance with the Prophet had to swear allegiance with the Imam.
And they all did.
And they all did.
And they all broke it.
Yes. And they all broke it. Yes, that's right. That's
not
right.
All of them, but
yes,
the majority of them.
The majority of them did.
Right.
Of course they did.
You had those who didn't.
Yeah.
Who are famous in Islamic history as the companions of Ali.
Ali, yes.
So, you know, this is the facts of the matter. And you see him from day one, whether it was within the Quraysh, whether it was among the tribes and among the enemies of the Prophet, from day one there are enemies of Imam Ali. And it is finally also his enemies that are the ones that, cause his shahada. And we see that in a very similar way, this reality exists for Imam Khomeini.
Exactly.
In his time. Because, this is the beautiful thing about Imam, is that he didn't just sit in his study quarters, in his, study room.
Yes.
In Qom and just write the fatwas and not deal with unpleasant matters.
Sure.
His understanding of Islam, of a faqih, was not just simply somebody who theoretically, talks about, as he says it, I'm saying this because this is his own words,
sure,
talks about bat urine, whether it's najis or pak.
Mm.
Matters which are totally irrelevant to the lives of most Muslims.
Sure.
He actually saw himself, and this is the correct way of understanding Islam, as a person, both as a mu'min, but also as a faqih, and as somebody who is a scholar, who needs to implement Islam. It's not only about, writing the fatwas, theoretically, or telling us what the ahkam are.
Sure.
It's about implementing them.
Mm-hmm.
Even in the qiba, which is a big problem that we had with a lot of these so-called scholars, is because there was the ghaibah, they figured, hey, whatever, can't do much. Let's just stay home and be, as Imam Khomeini called them, pseudo-saints.
Exactly. Now, this is a very key word, isn't it, in our discussion now, isn't it? Yes. The pseudo-saints, yes.
There's no value. It's very egoistic to not look around in your life and look at the problems that the Muslims have, whether it's in your own city, whether it's in the Ummah,
sure,
and not to do anything about it.
Exactly.
Or to try to do some small little charity action and think like, well, I've done my duty.
Sure.
Don't get me wrong. Some people don't have the capacity to do anything more.
That's fine.
We're not asking everybody to be, like Imam.
No.
But I think most Muslims underestimate their own capacity and their own power and their ability to, and when I mean power, I don't mean power independent of Allah. I'm talking about this issue that we talked about before, which is the promise of Allah, which is that if you take a step, if you make effort, if you change your state, Allah will change your state.
Exactly.
If you change your own state, if you go on this path of helping Allah, Allah will help you.
Yes.
And they underestimate the power of this.
Yeah.
And yet here's a man like Imam
Who lived that.
Mm. And from day one, even before the activities were very political and overt, even before that, in the Hausa, you had people who didn't like him.
Exactly. Or disagreed with his...
disagreed is normal.
Normal, that's true.
It's a normal thing that happens among scholars.
Yeah, my disagreement was in much stronger terms.
Right.
They really didn't like the way he was thinking or what he was...
Well, they didn't like the fact that he was talking about implementing Islam.
Ah, thank you.
For them, they were in their safe little zone.
Zones, yes.
Let's just talk about it. Let's have our own little family situation where,
with our tribe and village
or our own household.
Household, yes.
Right? That within the walls, that's it. Outside the walls, I have nothing to do with it.
With it, yes.
Otherwise, I'll be thrown into jail, or otherwise they will, do something to my son. or my family.
Sure.
And yet Imam was not like that.
No.
For him, it was about implementing Islam.
And he really implemented it.
It's about action. Mm. It's not about talking about it.
Sure.
It's only. And unfortunately, what ended up happening is instead of those scholars understanding the breadth and the vastness of Islam, they reduced it to very personal ritualistic things.
Yes.
And said, we are implementing Islam.
Yes.
And putting aside all the social aspects of Islam, which, as Imam says, 90% of Islam is social. It's only 10% that relates to personal ritual things. When he talks about this in his book, he talks about that, if you look at the sources, the ayat and the ravayat, He says it's 100 to 1, or you know, some vast ratio in favor of social matters as opposed to personal matters.
Exactly.
And yet we ended up in a situation where
only personal matters are given the greater focus.
And those people were considered saints, and yes, they were really pseudo saints, because they were missing the main point.
Yeah, of course they were.
Again, we're not saying that people shouldn't do the personal things. We're not saying people shouldn't.
No. But it has to be put in its correct context. It has to be in its correct perspective.
There's this famous there's a famous tape, because you know before the revolution he spoke, and then they would pass around the
revolution of the cassette,
right? Yes. And he would do the tapes, and he's speaking, and you know he was very authoritative,
even though he was very mild in terms of his manner.
He didn't yell, he didn't he was very soft spoken, but he was very
authoritative.
And you know, because he used to do akhlaq, ethics, he used to teach ethics, tazkiyah nafs,
yes,
you know. Self purification.
He was renowned for
and there's
that.
A there's a famous tape where he's animated. He's you can tell he's upset. He's like, you know, my people are being killed, and they're telling me to give akhlaq dars. Dars for self purification. He goes, they're killing my, and he repeats it.
Yeah, they're killing my people.
They're killing my people, and they're telling me I have to give. How can I give you know, ethics class when my people are being killed?
Killed.
So this is the point.
Yes.
You can't give, you know, classes on ethics while your people are being killed.
Killed.
Do something about that, and then also give your ethics class.
Exactly. That's what needs to be dealt
right?
with first.
It's not
because
about...
he's talking in the context, of course, when the Shah's repression was getting was reaching its heights in Iran in terms of curfews and, you know, the
execution, murders, and torture.
And the very same scholars being thrown off rooftops off the top of Fezia, for example. So, I mean, come on. I mean, you're quite right, sir. Let's get this into perspective here.
Right. So, just like his mullah, who was loved and hated.
Loved and hated, absolutely.
Right? I mean, hated by who? Hated by the enemies of God.
God.
Mm-hmm. Hated by the munafiqeen.
Yes.
By the hypocrites.
Yes.
Hated by those
pseudo-saints that were existing at that time.
Hated by those who want to maintain their privilege and, you know, live off Baytul Mal.
Yes.
Who want to, you know, take advantage of Islam and see what Islam can do for them, as opposed to what they can do for Islam.
Exactly.
Hated by all those who, you know, grudgingly had to accept the Prophet, but in their hearts, never entered their hearts.
No, faith never entered their
hearts. Who took advantage of the rahmah of the Prophet. And this is not a mistake of the Prophet. The Prophet is, you know,
Rahmatullah. Of course he was.
He's the manifestation of
he
divine
was
rahmah.
Mercy of God or not.
There is no other thing that he should have done or can do, but
except
to
show mercy,
the rahmah, because that's his job in this world.
That was his job. Exactly. Thank you for putting it that
he's
way.
He's not
going
to suddenly be like, well, I know you're going to take advantage of me, so I'm not going to be...
No.
Just like Allah doesn't do that.
No, Allah doesn't do that. No,
he's not. We take advantage of his mercy...
All the time. Yes, I certainly do.
Right.
Yes.
We all
do. With me, it's a full-time job.
Right.
Yes.
And he doesn't... He doesn't stop being merciful.
I can't recall writing anything at the moment.
Right. We can't recall him not being merciful.
Not being merciful, exactly.
Right?
Thank you.
So, this is the Prophet who, you know, when the conquest of Mecca happened, forgave the enemies.
Yes.
And they took advantage of it. Full advantage
full
of it.
Full advantage of it, yes.
Okay, so these were the people that hated Imam Ali. Mm. In the same way, you have Imam Khomeini.
Mm. May God bless his soul.
Who, in a society which was very corrupt, which was based on fear, which was based on extreme class distinctions.
Yes.
Where you had, you know, super wealthy royalty.
Aristocrats.
And aristocratic level.
Elite, yeah.
And then you had a vast,
peasant,
large
peasant class.
And a small, you know, middle class, basically... was just trying to, you know, not get crushed.
Crushed, yes, basically.
You know, from either side.
Yeah, end up being peasants again, yes. Hmm.
This is a man who dared to stand up.
And challenge that.
And challenge all of it.
All of it.
You know, root from the root. Not simply as a matter of just some tactical political matter.
No, from the root.
The whole legitimacy of this, you know, system that had been entrenched for maybe 1,000 years, where you really had this feudal society, this forced secularization and westernization from top in order to you know, pursue America's interests and Britain's interests in the world and in the region for the, you know, 20th century, whether it was Britain first in the beginning of the 20th century, whether it was America in the second part of the 20th century. Their whole secularization and top-down, you know, benevolent dictator approach that they had with the Pahlavi dynasty, and of course it wasn't benevolent, but this is the way they were justifying it. They were saying he's a dictator, but he's benevolent.
Sure.
He's trying to take his society, you know, towards civilization and towards westernization. So you have that. You have the whole feudal system.
Sure.
You have this illiteracy. You have this ignorance among the people,
which is
vast. Mm. It's a mass ignorance. Mm. And here's a man who stands up to all this. So of course he's going to have enemies.
Of course he's going to have enemies.
He's going to have enemies within his own circles. He's going to have enemies within the scholars, the religious scholars. He's going to have enemies, of course, within the ruling elites.
Well, that's true. Because
he's going to have enemies, you know, in those countries that are supporting these ruling elites.
Sure. I mean, these are like, you know, for example...
He's going to have enemies among intellectuals and professors. Absolutely. And people who are so-called educated so-called...
Pseudo-intellectuals, of course.
Right, who think that by becoming...
Who only want to get their own benefit out of the system.
Yeah, who are saying that, you know, we have to become Western in order to advance.
That's right.
And he's saying, we have to follow Islam to advance.
Of course, because he had an extraordinary insight into... the message of Islam and from the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, was living them, and at the same time, as we've discussed in other programs as well, he's the living embodiment of Islam. I mean, he understands it on a level that, you know, even today, you know, we don't have that, you know, in a sense.
Right. And so we see that just, you know, as the example of Hezbollah, you have polarization. Polarization is not a bad thing.
No, it's not.
Having
a bad thing.
Enemies gives you value.
It does.
This is one of the ways you can tell the character of a person.
Person.
In fact, we have the Supreme Leader talking about this in terms of nations, about how nations, you know, who don't have enemies don't really have value.
No, they don't.
How is it possible that you would, you know, not have any enemies? We're not talking about small nations which need to just, you know. Mm. We're talking about nations who are, you know, have their own history, their own culture, who are, you know, pillars of human civilization, who are not, you know, countries that are on the periphery.
Sure.
I'm not talking about geographically on the periphery. I'm talking about civilizationally.
Sure.
Well, of course you're going to have differences. If you're going to stand up for haq, if you're going to stand up for justice.
Yeah.
Imam Ali, there's the famous story where, you know, he's the Khalifa and his relative, his cousin.
That's right. Yes, very nice story.
You're
That's
Mr. Right. Hadith, so yes, yeah. Please go ahead if you want to tell us.
No, I mean, I'll leave that entirely to yourself.
Well, basically, just to give you the gist of it, you know, he has his cousin, who he likes and who likes him, and there's, you know, there's good relations in terms of friendship, friendly relations, who wants money from
the Bayt al-Mal.
From Bayt al-Mal, from the treasury.
Yes.
And he takes...
He was asking... for that extra money, and the Imam refused. He said, "No, you can't have that."
And then he took a piece of
burning coal, and I think if I remember correctly, he was blind. I believe he was. And he gave that in his hand, and you know, I'll let you carry on.
Well, basically, he said, "Why'd you do this? My hand is burning." He said, "This is just so you that feel the fire of hell,
exactly.
When you do these things,
when
you ask for this, this is the result of it." Okay, so even with his closest relatives, he maintained justice.
Exactly.
So, you know,
in other words, he was saying to him that you're getting your due share from Bayt al-Mal. You don't need anything extra.
Right, and not only that, but this is what justice is.
This is what justice is. Yes,
it's not about me being your cousin and your relative.
Exactly, because this was the whole intention of his asking, because he was trying to use that relationship to get something more out of it, and this was exactly the problem that Kufa was facing, because there was so much nepotism, so much of this favoritism, that money was being expropriated, going to the wrong people. There was a poor class in Kufa For which Mawla, as we all have read and know from our childhood stories, that he was carrying flour and food to the doors of those people because of this corruption that had set into Kufa. And the Imam wanted to redress that, rebalance that. But unfortunately, we know about the battles and so on and so forth. And what,
right.
What
and so place. Basically, you see, and even more intense, the whole thing with Talha and Zubayr.
Exactly.
You know,
the companions who were
very close companions. You know, these were people who were there when Hazrat Fatima salamu alayha was being buried.
Buried, yes.
Which is very rare distinction.
Yes.
In human
and
history.
How that turned, right?
Yeah. So we're not talking about, you know, low level people. We're talking about heavy guys.
Heavy duty stuff.
And yet he's even standing in front of them and saying, "Look, we can't. You know, why are you doing this? Why are you ruining everything for yourself?"
Selves.
Okay? Now, let me just add this here. Exactly like Imam Ali alayhi salam, Imam Khomeini, his enemies acknowledged him as being somebody that is just.
Just.
And somebody who is, you know, capable and stands up for truth. So this is another thing that distinguishes somebody who is polarizing.
That's right. Because when the enemy itself acknowledges the fact that you are right, correct on the principle stand that
and
you're
that you are that
you are what you say you are.
Exactly.
Thank you.
So this is the point. You know, we have this unfortunate disease amongst us ourselves. I'm including myself as the number one person with this problem.
Sure.
Is
and
that
the one
we
that
think
you're talking to as well and discussing this. Yes, absolutely.
That we think that somehow, if we stand up for Islam, this is not going to be to our benefit. That somehow we should just, you know, tone it down a little. You know, don't... And when I mean tone it down, I'm not talking about, you know, in terms of expression. I'm talking about principle.
Principle, yes.
You know, well, we see that Imam Ali does the exact opposite.
He does the exact
We see
opposite.
That Imam Khomeini does exactly the opposite.
Sure, sure. And this is why we unfortunately read in history the loneliness of Imam Ali.
Exactly.
And that is very, very difficult to express because I can't help being emotional as soon as I say those
of
words.
Course.
Because this is the price you pay for
of course
trying to for doing the right thing.
Right. Now Imam Ali in its greatest degree, but if you look at Imam Khomeini as well, you know,
it was very lonely.
Can you imagine
at the top?
You're 80 years old.
Yes.
And you are responsible for an entire nation, which is going through the deepest social revolution it's gone through in 1,000 years.
Years, absolutely.
You're fighting a war with the whole world
against you,
okay,
and with sanctions
and everything that goes with it. You're dealing with munafiq. You're dealing with munafiq who have pulled a sword. You're dealing with people within your own group who are actually agents of the enemies, and yet you handle it. And of course, this has to do with relying on God and believing in truth and standing up for truth. This is the greatest power anyone can have. The way you want power, I'm telling you this.
Yes.
You want power?
Sure.
Stand up for truth.
Exactly.
Allah will give you the power.
Allah will give you the power.
The minute you don't stand up for truth, Allah will be like, hey, you want me to give you power for not standing up for truth? And you know what? This is something we experience in our own lives. Just think about the situations in your own life.
Sure.
Those of us who've had a little bit more time to sin in this world.
Yes, absolutely.
Right?
Yes, true.
Those times when you didn't stand up for Haq, Allah gave you the answer.
He did.
He answered you in a way and you realized, oh my God,
I shouldn't have done that.
This is where I went wrong.
This is where I went
And those times when you stand up for truth, where you stood up for truth,
yes,
and you fought it, and you handled it, and you had the sabr, and you had the patience, and you had the steadfastness, Allah rewarded you immediately.
Immediately. That's true.
Okay.
Absolutely true.
So we see that you have Imam Ali alayhi salam, who, as Shahid Matari says, is this figure who is this person, is this being who is polarizing, pulls in the good, right? Repels the bad.
The evil, the bad.
And those who are enemies of truth and of God.
Sure.
And exactly the same way, you know, whatever, 1,400 years later.
Sure.
You have a person like Imam Khomeini, who comes at a time in world history, at a time in Iranian history, at a time in Islamic history, at a time in global history.
Sure.
And completely changes the equation.
And I tell you one thing, though. This attraction, this polarization you talk about, and repulsion, is very true of Imam Khomeini, because we who were living outside Iran had nothing to do with what was happening here in the Islamic Republic, were simply found this attraction due to the basis of his righteousness, due to this principled righteous stand that Imam Khomeini was the living embodiment of, was immediately attracted those people who also want to join in that exactly. good. And the repulsion, yes, that was for those who basically are on the path of unbelief. So let them go their own way.
Exactly. So, and I think the one lesson we can learn from Imam Ali and from Imam Khomeini,
sure,
and Imam Ali as the main figure in this, and Imam Khomeini as that thing that we saw in our own lives, not just something that we read about.
No. I mean,
is whenever you stand up for truth, whenever you stand up for Islam, whenever you stand up for God, even though it's hard in the beginning, Allah will reward you. Exactly. And whenever, and exactly the opposite happens. So don't think this is just one part of the equation. The other part of the equation is also true, which is that when you don't stand up for truth, when you compromise unnecessarily on certain matters of principle, when you think that you are doing, you know, something with the enemies of truth because it will somehow, you know, help you personally, or it will somehow, you know, allow you to move on, then Allah punishes you. In ways that you couldn't even have imagined.
Sure.
So let's not make that mistake. Mm-hmm. And let's look at the example that we had with Imam in our lives and use that as the example in our daily lives.
Dr. Mahdi Tarabi, thank you very much for that insight. And I'm sure we're going to have much more deeper discussions exactly about this polarization in later sessions. But thank you very much indeed for your contribution today. And I hope listeners have benefited from the program. And it just leaves me to say, Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. May the peace and mercy and blessings of Allah be upon you all. Thank you very much for listening today, and goodbye.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
The presence of different scholars from IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the All Beneficent, the All Merciful. Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. I'm Atta, the host of this program. This is Viewpoints. With me in the studio are two guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, and we want to discuss another important topic regarding the speeches and the addresses of the Supreme Leader of Iran, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, Brother Ali Alevian, and Sayyid Mohsen Naqvi. Sayyid Mohsen, assalamu alaikum, welcome to the show.
Alaykum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thanks for inviting.
You're welcome. And Brother Ali Alevian, assalamu alaikum, brother, and welcome to the show.
Wa alaykum assalam. Thank you for having me here.
So today we want to talk about the important concept of adala, or justice, in the thoughts and the speeches of Ayatollah Khamenei. So regarding the concept of adala or justice, for sure, when we are on the way to achieve justice, there are some obstacles. And these obstacles ban us from reaching the justice in true sense of the word. The leader has also enumerated some of the obstacles that are on our way to reach justice, Sayyid Mohsen Naqvi. One of the things that the leader has talked about is that a person, if is not purified inside the spirit, his own spirit, cannot reach justice. So from one side in the world, in today's world, from one side we see that the people are getting away and away from purity inside, I mean tazkiyah nafs, purification inside, and purification of spirit. And from the other side, they are looking for justice, okay? And a very big contrast and contradiction that exists. But according to what leader says, if a person does not achieve purification inside, for sure he cannot path the way of justice. Is it true?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Yes, this is very true. Mm-hmm. Because you know the verse which we recited in the previous program, chapter 2, 124, mm-hmm. verse number 124, in which Allah said, "La yanalu ahdi al-zalimin." We explained over there that if a person is evildoer, if a person is committing sin, if he himself is not purified, and if he's not going towards the purification, Allah is not giving the imamah. Why? Because imamah is a status where a person who is just must get this status. In regards to what you have just mentioned, that people themselves, they're not purifying themselves, but from outside they're seeking justice from outside, it is because we have two types of people. In relation to the ignorance, we have two types of people. One, the one who knows that I'm ignorant, and he goes towards the knowledge. Yeah, he tries to get that knowledge. This person is aiming to get or gain the purification. This is a normal state. There is another type of people who even do not know that he does not know.
That's right.
He believes that what he knows is right. We all are ignorant towards our own, self, we can say, status. How many times remember Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala? How many times we purify ourselves? The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, when he used to sit in a place, if it was even for 1 minute or 2 minutes, he wouldn't stand up from that place, or he wouldn't change his place where he was sitting until he at least would read astaghfar for 25 times.
Oh.
It's not for himself. It's in order to teach others.
That's right.
It means that you need to remember Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. You need to purify yourself. And when we say astaghfar, or I seek forgiveness, it means that I will not commit this thing again. In the individual justice, when we were talking about the personal justice, we said that committing sin is injustice.
That's right.
And that's why we say, in the prayer we say, ظَلَمْتُ نَفْسِي.
Yeah.
I have done ظُلْم,
or oppression towards my soul.
Oppression to my soul. What is this oppression? This is sin. This is wrong, we can say deeds. So basically,
but brother, believe me that in today's world it's very much difficult.
No, it's not difficult. We are ignorant towards this. We do not pay attention towards this. It's not from our priorities.
I mean, the army of Satan is active too.
That was at the time of the Prophet as well. Okay. That was the time of Adam alayhi salam. The shaitan itself has made Adam alayhi salam to be expelled from the paradise.
But all these things, and the media and the amusements nowadays.
The main point is, what are our priorities?
Uh-huh.
If we make our priorities, or if we design our life or routine life according to the priorities, which takes us towards the perfection, takes us towards the purification, towards tazkiyatun nafs, yes, then these armies couldn't do anything.
That's
because, even in the Quran, it is also mentioned that shaitan in the Quran has said that I will take away, or I will make them to deviate,
human beings.
Illa salihin or salihun, except those who are the pious ones, who are the righteous ones.
Yes.
So we, every single person has the potential to become righteous.
That's right.
It's the matter, practically, do you gain that status or not?
And here comes to the scene the term, the mu'allim that you said, okay, or the murabbi, the trainer, the spiritual trainer, comes to the scene in order to guide the people. And, you know, because the people and most of the families nowadays are concerned and are busy with the academic life of their children, they leave the spiritual part, okay? And this is spirituality for
this
sure.
This is the wrong definition of mu'allim, which has been, you know...
Yes, the academic, only limiting it to academic life and not the spiritual.
And one more thing I just want to add here, because you mentioned the academic.
Mm-hmm.
In today's world, we learn to earn.
Yes.
You know, that's our aim is this world.
Yes.
We do not learn to become perfect.
Money is honey.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Today, we get the education to have a good earning, good money, good status in this society, in this world.
Yes.
Whereas before, people used to learn for the hereafter. That's why we had the scholars who were the father of geometry.
Yes.
The father of medical sciences.
Yes.
I don't know, the father of algebra.
Optics.
While they were the religious, you know, scholars.
Yes, they were Muslims. Yes, faithful Muslims, that's right. Okay, Brother Ali Aravian, so Ma'naviyah is one part of reaching justice in a society, and Sayyid elaborated on that. But Aghlaniyah and rationality is another part.
Yeah, sure.
And I hope that we can say these two come hand in hand in reaching the justice. So when we are talking about the role of Aghlaniyah or the rationality, in observing and achieving justice, what do we mean exactly?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Allah's peace and blessings be upon the Holy Prophet of Islam and his immaculate progeny. Yes, the base for and this discussion, this topic from the very beginning that we started talking about justice, when we started in this series of shows to talk about justice, I think this is the peak of our discussion, where we are going to talk about the obstacles. What are the, let's say, this is sort of pathological look at the issue, that what is the problem that we cannot have a social justice in our societies. Earlier, we have been saying that, inshallah, later on, that when we come to see the roots, the reasons or the factors that are working as the obstacle, we shall explain it. Now that the concepts are defined, alhamdulillah, the term and all whatever was needed was explained. Now is the time to see what are the problems that work as, let's say, hindrance or obstacle. The first one that said explained was working on the self or self-purification. That is a key factor that we need. A person who wants to spread justice, he needs to first work with himself and make self-building. With remembrance of God, with the remembrance of God and practicing with himself, he can then prescribe the justice for others. But is that all, and that is spirituality by itself enough? To be honest, we have to say no. Spirituality by itself or manawi by itself is not enough. Spirituality accompanied by rationality actually will perfect each other. If this justice that we are after is having only one aspect of a spirituality, it will have a problem in the content then. So there is no wisdom behind it. Also, in case, think it only rational, if the justice that we are looking for is something quite rational and without any spirituality, this is something that West is suffering from. So then again, it will come at the end of the day as the first opponent of itself, in performance, in the time that it's going to be implemented. So both of them at the same time are needed to perfect each other, to show a clear picture of what justice is. It's the time when actually justice is going to show itself.
That's right.
When something, from one side, it is spiritual, and from other side, it is quite rational, and it That's can right. be legislated. It can be looked logically.
And the rapper says that sometimes some groups of the people who are spiritually grown up too, okay,
yeah.
are looking for justice in a society, but it becomes the counter justice on the end. Why? Because in their process of achieving justice, they do not observe the aqlani part.
And we have witnessed it in our last four decades in the Islamic Revolution. Yeah. And there are many cases that we have in mind that they came with this mentality, yes. with this mindset.
I just want to just mention a couple of verses about the